A Gentle Introduction to South Indian Classical Carnatic Music, Part 4 of 4, by Ramesh Mahadevan, read to you by Shiv Kumar Kalyan Raman, and illustrations by Shiv Kumar and Harihar from Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, Troy, New York. The concert musician. If you have ever been to a Carnatic concert, you would have noticed that the ensemble sitting in the stage is usually a few people strong. If the main performer is a vocalist, let's assume this for the time being, he is usually accompanied by a violinist and a mridangam player. If he is lucky, there's also a ghatam player tapping on a clay pot for an accompaniment. There's of course a person strumming the tambura or the shruti box. And if the musician is a senior artist, some of his disciples too sit on the stage and sing along, sometimes camouflaging the flaws of the guru, and sometimes raising the strength of the presentation and reaching higher notes their gurus cannot reach. It's always a dream of every student to become a performing musician and to be top-notch. But before being let loose on concert stages, they still have one final plateau of excellence to reach: the ability to perform what is called a ragam, tanam, pallavi, or simply RTP, or simply pallavi. Notice again how we use the word pallavi to mean two different things here. Ragam Tanam Pallavi is a total elaboration of a specific ragam and is 100% improvisation and creativity. It is the perfect place for a musician to show off his skill and mastery in enunciating a ragam. The Ragam Tanam Pallavi is in fact a centerpiece of a Carnatic music concert. First of all, a musician chooses a strong ragam to perform his RTP. Oftentimes he picks a Melakartha ragam where the scope to make creative melodies is enormous. Because they have all the allowed seven notes in the scale, remember they are sampurna or complete ragams, he would also often choose a complex thalam to set his musical phrases in. Say he chooses the ragam Shankarabharanam and set to a thalam with an 11 beat cycle. Wow. In real concerts, usually the artist does not reveal the ragam of his RTP beforehand. The audience and often, in fact, the accompanying musicians find out the ragam just when the musician begins to play the RTP or sing it. The first part of the RTP is simply the alapane of the ragam. The word ragam is also a synonym for alapane, remember? After the alapane, the singer usually takes a break and sips hot water or milk kept on the sidelines, and the violinist takes over and tries to play similar musical phrases and complement what the singer sang. This calls for tremendous memory for the structure of what was sung and ear for musical phrases. Of course, no one keeps tabs on how accurately the violinist follows the musician, and perfect accuracy is in fact not required. What is required is to be able to fit into the general color and being able to present their own improvisational aspects. The closer the violinist and musician are, the better. This probably explains why specific violinists tend to play for specific musicians in tours, because they know each other very well. The second part of RTP is called thanam. Don't confuse this with thalam. Here the ragam is elaborated even more, and I had given an example of this before. But the improvisation is in a faster tempo and is set to a rhythm, and syllables like tham, thanam are used in the section as opposed to the syllables used in alapane. The violinist follows the musician after each passage. Again, it's structured into a few passages. If the instrumentalists are performing in RTP, the thanam segment, they would play the sympathetic strings for added effect. Let me give you one more example of a thanam. I will sing this thanam in the ragam Kedar Gola. Sarima pani sanida pamaga risa tadarina nanara tararararari. It's a passage of the ragam. Anum tanum 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 tum tatanum tatanum tanum tum tatanum tada
ஆஹானும் ததானும் 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 தத்தானும் தம்மோர்னும் தும் தத்தானும் ஆஹானும் தும் ததானும் 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 தானும் ததானும் 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 தானும் ததானும் 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 நுந்தானும் ததானும் ததானும் நும் தானும் ததானும் 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 தானும் 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 ததானும் தானும் தானும் ததானும் ததானும் தானும் ததா தானும் தானும் ததானும் ததானும் தானும் 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 ததானும் ததானும் தத்தானும் ததானும் 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 தானும் 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 ததும் தனும் தனும் ததும் தானும் ததானும் தானும் ததும் தனும் 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 ததும் தானும் ததானும் தானும் ததானும் ததும் தனும் 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 தான்.
இஸ் அன் எக்ஸாம்பிள் ஆஃப் அ தானம். ஆஃப்டர் திஸ் தி சிங்கர் ஸ்டார்ட்ஸ் ஆஃப் அன் அ பல்லவி, which in the context of an RTP is just one line of text often made up by the musician himself. Now, on my webpage, there is a webpage on Manodharma Sangeeta where you can see examples of RTPs of several musicians in several ragams, and you can experience the Thanam, Ragalapana, etc. from that webpage. It's freely available for download. After the Thanam, the singer starts a Pallavi, as we said. He might have very well chosen Baba Black Sheep as the Pallavi, if he can massage the line to fill the Pallavi. Here the Mridangam and Ghatams join in, but usually the Sahityam chosen is much more meaningful than Baba Black Sheep. Usually it's on some god or goddess, etc. The musician would embark on a series of Nerivals, essentially stretching the one line of Pallavi into several melodic phrases. The Pallavi has a particular structure called Arudhi, where after half of the Pallavi, it falls on a beat. So that is one characteristic of the Pallavi. Otherwise, more or less, it's like a Nerival type elaboration of the Pallavi. The violinist, of course, follows the musician one step behind. Interestingly, at this point, the Mridangam could play when the musician sings, and the Ghatam could play for the violinist. The musician would cap it all off finally with a spate of Kalpanaswarams, by which time all the dimensions of the ragam would have been hopefully brought out. Then the singer would break into an impromptu ragamalika, singing Kalpanaswarams in a bunch of ragams one after the another, sending the audience to raptures. He chooses the ragams in the ragamalika to be widely apart instead of only being subtly different. Often light ragams of Hindustani type ragams are also chosen. I have known several artists also sing the Pallavi itself in Ragamalika, like Seshagopalan or Balamurli Krishna, or have made a name for themselves doing this. If Shankarabharanam is the ragam for the RTP, then derivatives of Shankarabharanam are usually not chosen in the Ragamalika. At the end of the Kalpanaswaram passage of each ragam, he would sing the old Pallavi in the particular ragam. The grand finale is when he breaks into a long series of swarams, typically in the reverse order in the Ragamalika ragams, and finally landing on the initial ragam he had set out to play, Shankarabharanam. At this point, the singer typically lets the percussionist, the Mridangam and Ghatam player, to perform a solo percussion piece. This is called the Tani Avartanam, or Tani. This is also the time when some audience a break and typically indulges in disruptive behavior like chatting, rushing home, dozing off, or going to the nearest canteen and picking up something to eat. The percussionists, of course, hate this, and the several artists have asked the audience to sit in place. They grab this opportunity to perform intricate aspects of the thalam and layam. A good ragam thanam pallavi can last upwards of an hour, and it shows as a vehicle for showcasing a singer's talent. One of the dangers in writing about a typical music concert is that these days there is no clear definition of what is typical. What is typical was set forth by Arikudi Ramanuja Iyengar two generations before us, which is being followed, where there is usually a varnam, there is small ragams, typically a madhyama, pratimadhyama ragam like Panthuvarali, etc., which is sung earlier in the concert, and then either a major ragam or a minor ragam alapana, followed by a big major ragam alapana, and a RTP, which is sung later. And intermediate, there are many short or quick medium tempo songs to bring back the concert alive if it has been going in one dimension too long. Nowadays, concert formats are all over the place. These days, several concert musicians follow some Hindustani formats as well and just sing ragam, thanam, pallavi and a few additional pieces. There are, of course, numerous other changes that always keep happening, some trend setting, some other just passing fads. Let's look at a garden variety Carnatic concert. A typical concert lasts about 3 hours, and most concerts don't have a program given out ahead of time. By and large, the audience does not know what song is going to be performed next, even though these days most musicians have become reasonably westernized and announce their next song and what ragam thalam they're set and who composed the song, usually after allowing the audience some time to guess and gratify themselves as to what the ragam or song was. The musician would start the concert with a fast-paced varnam. This not only serves as a warm-up piece for the ensemble to synchronize, it also sets the mood for the concert. And of course, it allows the latecomers, the audience, to find their seats and sit down before the heavy-duty songs are sung. Usually, the singers will also resort to some gimmicks in the varnam itself, such as playing the varnam in several speeds or nadais and adding their own kalpanaswaram passages. This will be followed by a song about Vinayaka in the ragam Hamsadvani, like, for example, Vatapi or Nata, like Mahaganapatim, etc. Given that there are so many songs in Hamsadvani and Nata about Vinayaka, you can almost predict what's coming. Then the singer performs a variety of songs, choosing them appropriately so that he has the right mix and order of ragams, tempo, and audience appeal. He or she would choose to express creativity wherever by performing Alapana, Nerval or Kalpanaswara at the appropriate parts of the songs, and eventually perform the RTP, Ragam Thanam Pallavi. And several concerts do not necessarily have the RTP as well. After the RTP, the concert winds down and tends to get light, where the musician plays several short light numbers. Instrumentalists sometimes tune their instruments to a madhyama pitch or a higher pitch to give the concert an artificially bright mood and wake up the sleeping members of the audience. These light pieces are called tukudas, literally meaning pieces. They could be popular recent numbers or trademark songs of a particular performer or even movie songs. Many tukudas are set to light ragams or rare ragams in some Hindustani ragams. They could be a bhajan song, a folk song, an abhang, a song in obscure languages, a thilana. This is basically a dance song, often set to high tempo with a lot of dance steps and syllables such as theme, takademi, takatathai and all that. Or javali, a short quick composition. Towards the end of the concerts, members of the audience usually request their own choices, often honored by the musicians. Finally, the concert is officially ended by singing a brief number called Mangalam, usually in the ragam Saurashtram, and ended up in Madhyamavati or sometimes in ragam like Suruti. Usually it goes like Pavamana Sutudubatu Padara Rupamula Koni Nama Rupamulago Nitya Jaya Mangalam Mangalam. This is the Ragam Suruti to finish up. A very, very brief history of Carnatic music. Like many things Indian, even Indian music has a colourful history which can probably give us insights into some of the numerous traditions and grammatical structure. Indian classical music as an institution has evolved over the years. it is still in the process of evolution, changing itself at every possible opportunity and adapting itself to popular sentiment and political climate. Let's take a quick look at the history of Indian music. Of course, it'll be a quick look, and you can look at any of the references quoted at the end of this primer for an in-depth study. Remember that in ancient India, music played a significantly larger role in people's lives compared to modern times. Our ancestors did not listen to music in their chariot stereos, chariot stereos in the way we do these days, in our car stereos. Greater percentage of the population compared to these days composed music, performed it, and even did research on it. Composers were also called Vageyakaras. Today there are much fewer composers and more performers. People dedicated themselves to music, kings and queens patronized music and had a full court of accomplished musicians. As Dr. Bhagyalakshmi puts it, kings went to sleep and woke up to music. There were music competitions held once in a while which pitted one learned musician against another, where the degree of difficulty was so high that most of the modern day musicians would not even qualify to enter. Also, these music contests produced outstanding scholarship. They were also vehicles to heap shame and humiliation on the defeated rival. So you can see some of this in old Tamil movies, such as Thiruvaliyaadal, where such examples are shown as part of myths, mythology. An aspect which is hard for me to understand. History is also full of legends and astonishing individual accomplishments. Very high standards were established. It took musicians several decades of intense studentship, typically in a guru kulam, that is working with the guru at home, before he or she could be considered a concert performer. These years, after one summer, kids are ready to perform on stage as performing music. Even in the early part of the century, people did not have the modern day high stress, no time for anything lifestyle. Concerts lasted all night and people sat down, sustained, listened to the same ragam performed for the sixth continuous hour. These days we get a few minute condensed pop versions of most alapane on CDs and tapes. Well, I'm sounding like a bitter cynic, but it should be borne in mind that the ancient texts on music and traditional Carnatic music in general are way, way more complex than what I have elaborated. There's almost very little you or I can add to the Indian music theory, really. There is a staggering amount of work, written work on music that exists in India, right from the Vedic times to the present day. A good lot of them are extremely sophisticated and seminal and boggle the mind on the level of analysis. It is easy to read just the first paragraph of one of those works and get totally lost in a buzzword maze of Lakshana, Bheda, Grama and so forth. These texts on music are about as tough as texts on Indian philosophy, and the degree of abstraction employed can be scary. Remember that we had more than our share of mathematicians and theoretical people and software folks in India who not only invented concepts like zero, but also established fascinating mathematical foundations for music. Not knowing enough Sanskrit, or music for that matter, can only hamper our quest for understanding these texts. Suffice it to say that there exist elaborate frameworks in which the music system is based. Throughout history, famous texts for music are more or less considered the Bibles, and the rules and formulations they've spelt out were strictly conformed and taught to students. There is something or other mentioned about Indian music in a variety of Indian literature. Even in the Vedic times, elements of music were recognized. Mantras were chanted using selected notes. Initially, only a few notes were used, but eventually, to relieve the monotony, more notes got added. Samaveda, the most musical of the Vedas, is almost sung out even these days. For most parts, the lower octave was employed. Mandrasthayi, remember? Music was considered divine and was kept in the selected social circles for most parts. The earliest ragam is speculated to be Sama ragam, which could be derivative of the modern Karagara Priya. Theories and treatises began to be written about how the primitive sound Om gave rise to notes, etc. By the time the epic period came around, the ancients were entrenched in the seven notes used in Indian music as building blocks, namely Sarigama Padani. They were considered the Saptaswaras, these are also celebrated in certain Skritis like Shobillu Saptaswara. They were considered the Saptaswaras, and the explanations were abound regarding their deeper meaning. About the only thing that was not fixed was the exact frequency or pitch in the octave which was used to produce these notes. Which keys could be used to produce these seven notes? The relationship between Shruti, that is frequency, and Swara, notes, has been the focus of several theoretical texts on music throughout the ages. Written by Bharata, And this is a monumental reference for the Bharatanatya and dance formed, but contains several chapters on music as well. The date of this work is pegged somewhere between the 2nd century BC to the 2nd century AD, and probably the first work which clearly elaborated the octave and divided it into 22 keys. Bharata based his idea on stunning scientific experiment he performed using his musical instruments made of strings, which proved that there could be only 22 frequencies which could be generated in an octave. He even located them on his octave and thus tuned his instruments. Not only Bharata invented the keys in an octave, he also gave some basic rules to scale building. He defined three major scales with the following shifts to choose 7 keys out of 22. Scale 1, 4/3/2/4/4/3/2. This is called the Shajagrama. Scale 2 is 4/3/2/4/3/4/2, called the Madhyama Grama. And scale 3 is 3/2/4/3/3/4/3, called the Gandhara Grama. The word Grama is simply a synonym for scale. This kind of algorithm is somewhat similar to the Western major minor's algorithms. In addition to these principal algorithms, he also derived 7 secondary scales per algorithm. Each of these derived scales was called a Murchana, literally meaning fainting. From these Murchanas, using some other rules, he derived even more scales, which could have been less than 7 notes, called Tanas, which eventually led to what could be called Ragams. Phew! It isn't clear whether Bharata used the word Ragam in the sense it is used these days. An interesting point is, Bharata's theory has been pretty much the guiding principle for subsequent musicologists throughout history. Various theories were framed to understand the divine and religious nature of these 7 notes. There were theories to assign each note to a body part which produced sound, like nose, throat, stomach, head, etc. Yet another theory suggested that the sounds of each note match those of common animals, like sa for peacock, re for ox, ga for goat, ma for crane, pa for cuckoo, dha for horse, ni for elephant, etc. All this might sound very primitive, but believe me, these theories quickly go into extremely complicated mathematical formulations, just like the papers we write. Some people have even suggested formulas to generate millions of ragas. Next major work to hit the scene after Bharata's work was Dathilam. The exact period of this work is not firmly established. Here too, the author sticks to the 22 shruti per octave formalism, and even goes to suggest the 22 shrutis are the only ones a human body could make. This view was expressed again by another musicologist of the 13th century by the name of Sarangadeva, by his famous work Sangeeta Ratnakara. In fact, Sarangadeva was an expert in Ayurveda as well, and he goes on to give an Ayurvedic basis for the 22 Shruti octave. There were other seminal works such as Brihadesi's 9th century AD, written by Matanga. He probably takes the credit for the emergence of the term Raga, though the term had been used by authors before him. Matanga was the one who explained it and helped define it. Interestingly, around the same time, the native South Indian music is also dealt with terms like pan and palai, which can be construed as the South Indian equivalents of raga. Tevaram and Silabadigaram describe several such ragams, and in fact we have already seen that Ilango Adigal, the author of Silabadigaram, has described the prevailing Tamil algorithms to build scales called Ilikramam. It is quite possible that Ilango Adigal and the composer of Devaram and the South Indians in general were aware of the all-pervasive work of Bharata's Natyashastra. Quite a lot of cultural exchanges took place between the North and South, contrary to what we would like to believe now. However, these Tamil classics are great major works in their own right, and it's a pity that not too much of it is discussed in the context of Indian music, especially due to the large volume of musical literature in Sanskrit. Sangeeta Makaranda, a book presumed to be written in the 11th century by a person called Narada, enumerates 93 ragams and classifies them into masculine and feminine species. The next major work on music was Sangeeta Ratnakara, written by Sarangadeva during the 13th century. Sarangadeva was a Kashmiri, but he wrote his work while in South India. It was approximately around this time that South Indian music, Carnatic and Hindustani music, bifurcated themselves and began to evolve in two different directions. Dr. Ranga Ramanuja Iyengar suggests that the 12th century is a cutoff point in an operational sense. Even now, the Drupad music practiced in North India is somewhat similar in style to the South Indian Carnatic music. For example, in Drupad, they use a percussion instrument called Pakavaj instead of tabla, which is similar to the South Indian Mridangam. Sangeeta Ratnakara was a milestone of sorts. Not only was it a musicology text, but it also had a detailed presence for the performance. The grammar and framework are usually called Lakshana, and the actual performance is called Lakshya. We have also seen how he gave an Ayurvedic basis for the 22 Shruti octave. He too performed a famous experiment on a Veena to determine the 22 Shrutis uniquely. He also mapped the 22 Shrutis into 7 Swaras, like our table 3, and also suggested the mood for various Swaras. Sa produces heroism, Ri produces terror, Pa produces love, and so on. He was probably responsible for suggesting an interrelationship between the various notes constituting a raga by proposing a vadi, samvadi, anuvadi, vivadi notation, notion of a ragam. A word or two of these, since you might hear these terms mentioned. What is the relationship between the various notes in a ragam? How can we understand how the note sa is related to the note ma or dha in that ragam? This scheme defines a concept called the vadi, or the primary note of a ragam, or the sonant or the king. And by the same token, a samvadi, or the minister, or the second in line concordant note, anuvadi, or the servant to give a proper shape to the ragam, assonant, and finally the dissonant or vivadi is the enemy. It is questionable as to how useful such dissection is, but considerable volumes have been written about such things, and several hundred ragams and the vadi samvadi structure has been catalogued by several authors. You must remember that this theory is essentially to analyze the concept of a ragam and explain what gives it its specific aesthetic appeal. Sarangadeva, among other things, defined almost 264 ragams, including some Dravidian and North Indian ones. He also described the various kinds of microtones and how to produce them. He also classified them into various categories. He defined something called kakku, which is hardly used these days, as a blending of melody and shruti. More than anything else, after his work came into being, it provided a veritable guide to the performers. Any standard reference such as Dr. Bhagya Lakshmi's or Dr. Rangaramanuja Iyengar's or Dr. Sringi's book has greater details on Sangeeta Ratnakara. Sarangadeva's work probably launched a whole new era in music compositions and performance. In fact, for several centuries afterwards, the theorization of music became dormant, giving importance to performance. In the 17th century, there was a resurgence of theoretical works such as Sangeeta Sudha, written by Govinda Dikshitar, Chaturdandi Prakash Chikam, written by Venkatamaki. The latter expounded the present-day Melakartha scheme, which we have discussed in part 2. The author mentions 12 Shruti octave and defines the Melakartha scheme and uses the Shodasa Swarasthana or the aliasing Swarasthana structure. At that point, only 19 out of 72 ragas were known, Melakartha ragas. He proposed the Katapayadi scheme for figuring out the keys used in the Melakartha from the name. It is interesting to point out that the original names given for the 72 Melakarthas are not the one used these days. For example, he called the first Melakartha as Kanakambari, whereas it's called Kanakangi at present. In fact, except for one or two ragams, almost all of the 72 names are quite different compared to what he had meant. Although his names as well as the present names follow the Katapayadi scheme outlined in table 5, that is the prefixes are the same. It must be remembered, however, that this is not the only way to classify ragams. There are several other alternate schemes and names. Composers like Muthuswami Dikshitar used alternate names for several ragams. And you can get very deeply into such theoretical things. While such elaborate theoretical works were being written, eminent composers appeared on the scene and produced music. Annamacharya, 1424-1503, a devotee of the Lord of Tirupati, composed several notable pieces. He was followed by Purandaradasa in 1480-1464. Purandaradasa is considered to be the father of Carnatic music. He was a multimillionaire, Koteshwara, to begin with, and had accumulated enormous wealth in business. He was only interested in the pursuit of money and material pleasures like most of us, till one day, because of a divine intervention, he changed his life 180 degrees. He renounced his wealth and became a dasa, which means a servant, dedicating his life to serving God and making music in the God's honor. From then on, his life was one misery after another. There are several legends associated with him, which make interesting reading. Although, through all this, Purandaradasa never stopped making music. He is said to have composed nearly 250,000 songs in his lifetime, for which he has earned quite a lot of frequent composer mileage awards. By the way, this works out to be about 15 songs every single day of his life. Even discounting for exaggeration, he was quite prolific. Several hundreds of his songs are still available, although it is likely that many of the present-day versions of his songs were set to tune by later musicians. His compositions were mostly in his native tongue, Kannada, and you can hear most Kannada artists sing his songs prominently, and there are Purandaradasa days in several music sabhas. Purandaradasa songs are simple and easy for beginners to learn. He is the one who is credited with standardizing the Maya Malava Gaula as the lesson number 1 for beginning students, and said to have composed the Sarali Varsa Janta Varsa exercises for note reproduction for beginners. The golden age of Carnatic music was perhaps the time when the trinity of Carnatic music composers, Thyagaraja and Shama Shastri and Muthuswami Dikshitar, made music. Interestingly, they were all contemporaries, hailing from the same Thanjavur district, although it is not clear what kind of influence each had on the other. Their lifestyles, music, attitudes seem so different that it contributed to their music styles being distinct from each other. Volumes and volumes have been written about them. So what you'll find here is only thumbnail sketches. Thyagaraja is probably hailed as the king of Carnatic music, though he was, although when he was alive, he shunned publicity and even rejected the king's invitation to join his court. In fact, he renounced worldly goods, including copyrights to his songs, and devoted himself to God. His songs have the raw devotion, bhakti, if you will, and are considered emotional. He composed songs in his mother tongue, Telugu. It is not known how many songs he composed, but nearly 1,000 songs are available at present, completely notated and interpreted. He has also composed operas. From the musicology point of view, Thyagaraja is credited with the invention of sangatis and numerous other creative ideas in rhythm. Thyagaraja also, most famous compositions are the 5 Pancharatna Kritis, set in the ragams Natai, Gaulai, Arabi, Varali and Shri. Yes, who hasn't heard the song Enduro Mahanubhavula and not liked it? You can find these songs and classes on them on the Music Archive webpage. And Dikshitar was a more academician of music and pedagogue. He was quite a handsome man, which explains why he had 2 wives. He spent considerable time in North studying Hindustani music, which influenced him quite a bit. He wrote his songs primarily in Sanskrit. I have heard one of his songs with just one stanza in Tamil. About 400 or so of his songs exist at present. His songs are more complex and few can sing some of his more complicated pieces. His lyrics are generally in the praise of God or goddesses in point, and which are more subdued and formal compared to the raw energy of a Thyagaraja song. And they also describe the heritage of every particular deity or the temple. His songs are often slow, influence of Hindustani, and often went to different aspects of a ragam, and also considered grander. Shama Shastri is the more obscure of the 3. He is considered a wizard of rhythm and composed several pieces called Swarajatis, which enunciate various rhythmic patterns. Almost all his songs were on goddess Kamakshi. Interestingly, none of the Trinity's students made it very big, though some of Shama Shastri's students, Subbaraya Shastri and Annamaswamy Shastri, have made beautiful compositions that are available in T.K. Govindrav's book, or some are available on the Music Archive webpage. Interestingly, none of the Trinities, this brings to the point the curious teacher-student relationship that used to exist in India. Carnatic music was largely an oral tradition. Information was lost, sometimes forever, when gurus passed on their knowledge to their disciples. And this doesn't count jealous, selfish gurus who wouldn't teach anything to the disciples. It is surprising that ancient Indians, clever as they were, did not invent a scheme to notate music. But to be fair, the notation of music is tough given the wide variety of gamakas and variations of interpretations that are available. Today, music has gone online and you can find music including concerts, both in terms of MP3 files or classes online like in my webpage. Who knows what tomorrow will bring to us. There are several other notable composers like Gopalakrishna Bharati, who composed in Tamil and was a contemporary of the Trinity. Prior to him were other Tamil composers like Arunagiri Nadar and Arunachala Kavirayar. Swati Thirunal, the king of Travancore, was a great composer of the 19th century. Among the more recent composers are Papanasam Shivan, Balamurli Krishna and Lalgudi Jayaraman and Ravi Kiran. The list goes on and on. Now we have come to a point in history where not only has theorizing stopped, but even composing of heavy-duty pieces is lesser, and we have more performers than composers. Though they continue to be big compositions by famous composers, recent composers like Papanasam Shivan. Many of the references I have cited at the end give a long list of such performers, some real luminaries and some also plaids. But some almost have pompous sounding names like Shankarabharanam Narsayya, Thodi Raghavayyar and Mohanam somebody. A more fascinating aspect of history of Carnatic music is to study its evolution, delineate the broad musical tenets, etc. For example, even the instruments used in music making have changed over the years. Gone are the olden instruments, which were mostly derivatives of the veena. In fact, veena making was a fine art, and there were many, many types of veenas serving various purposes. The harp type instrument, yar, and the ancient flutes have disappeared. Instead, Western instruments such as clarinet, guitar, saxophone, mandolin and violin are increasingly being adapted to Carnatic music. Interestingly, not many newer Hindustani instruments such as sitar, sarod and sarangi are used in Carnatic music. Another historical accident was the introduction of violin in Carnatic music. It was popularized in the 19th century by Vadivelu, who was a member of what is known as the Tanjavur Quartet, a set of four brothers who were very talented composer musicians, especially of dance music. They came a little after the more famous Trinity. Vadivelu is said to be a disciple of Dikshitar. Vadivelu was a court musician of the Travancore royal court and made extraordinary contributions to dance music besides being a master of violin. By the way, he is said to have accompanied himself on the violin, a no mean feat. Like his musically gifted patron composer Swati Tirunal, the king of Travancore, he too died when he was in his mid-30s. It is interesting to note that violin was embraced very easily by the Carnatic music tradition, whereas it is not so prominent even now in Hindustani music. Prior to violin, veena used to accompany vocalists. The present day vocal art concert always has violin support, even though the violinist only plays in the shadow of the vocalist with very few chances to show off his talents. This is quite intriguing to say the least. Of course, the violinist can mask the vocalist sometimes, and this can be a plus point if the vocalist has a horrible voice. For the more detailed accounts of recent history's happenings, one should read a magazine from Madras called Shruti, which provides not only concert reviews, news events, but also gives us a peek into the prevailing Carnatic music tastes and cultures. There is also interesting web pages on Carnatic music such as Sangeetam.com, MusicIndiaOnline.com and Carnatic, karnatik.org.com, I think. And which gives a lot of lyrics and articles, etc. And my webpage on Carnatic Music Archive, which gives online classes on music and so on, and lyrics and notations. However, if you're a history buff, my strong recommendation would be Ranga Ramanuja Iyengar's delightful book. He is fanatical about Carnatic music and gets quite merciless in condemning the modern day Carnatic music world, his modern day being 1950s. I wonder what he would have to say if he sees people with questionable credentials writing Carnatic music primers like me, who even has the temerity to suggest that Western keyboard to be used as a learning tool. Mangalam, a few final words. While you are about to get more and more interested in Carnatic music, you should also perhaps ponder about where Indian classical music and Carnatic music in particular is heading towards as we enter yet another millennium. The old generation and conservatives complain about the total degradation of the standard of music these days, the low level of present-day talent and how everything is so hurried and compromised. Oh, this age of high crime and fast computers and social mores. Add to this the relentless onslaught of music from other cultures, notably Hollywood and Europe, and movie pop songs which completely take over public taste. Does Carnatic music as we know it have even a chance of survival? I think the answer is yes, purely because it has survived and is fact flourished the past several thousand years like many other Indian traditions and institutions. Part of the reason for the resilience is that Indian classical music systems are very adaptive, they change and rejuvenate themselves. If some of the Western ideas can be incorporated, they will be. Who knows, several decades from now, concepts like chords, polyphony and orchestration might be standard in Carnatic music. For other reasons for my optimism is that Indian institutions have always percolated down to the mass and touched them. I know I'm treading controversial grounds, following Dr. Rangaramanujan Iyengar. The Vedas were too complex for the ordinary people, so its core principles were outlined in simpler works such as epics and Puranas. While expert musicians duelled each other in royal courts, the masses sang bhajan songs without worrying about musical intricacies. These days, too, while concert musicians play packed halls in Madras, there's an overabundance of classical music being composed for the masses, movie songs and bhajans which are quite appealing and tend to hook people to classical music. Composers like Ilayaraja and A.R. Rahman have composed many, many nice classical pieces which are every bit melodious as some of the ancient songs, even if they don't meet all the criteria for great classical compositions. If you take good classical music directly to people, you're not going to lose. We cannot hang on to our past, we cannot go back to our Gurukulam days, we cannot analyze Sarigama in terms of horses and elephants. Let us learn more and adapt ourselves to new and exciting things in front of us, and let's enjoy Carnatic music. And there are some appendixes and references in the text and some suggested listening exercises which you can read in the main text. Thanks to Ramesh Mahadevan for the outstanding article.